Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hi, everyone. I'm Muriel Lanty from Lehigh Harrison. I've been lucky enough to head up government affairs at Lehigh Harrison since 2018, and I'm happy to be with you today.
Muriel, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast today. I want to spend a little bit of time talking about your current role, current organization, but before we do that, give us a thumbnail version of your background, your career timeline.
But thanks for giving me the opportunity. Now, I joined LHH about 8 years ago. And as I said, I'm today leading up government affairs globally for LHH. But I would say that probably my work-life journey has been a sum of very opportunistic decisions, always kind of a great mix between emotional and rational decisions. So I started very, very young. I wanted to be a teacher. And then I turned even more traditional to be a lawyer until before deciding upon which studies I would take at university. I decided that lawyer is definitely not a good path for me. And that was the first of my big turnarounds in my career. And I studied international affairs, a very generalistic or combination of studies between, law. So I keep that part, but also with economics and political sciences. That brought me to a series of international roles, starting in the insurance industry, before moving to the HR consultancy world, where I wanted to make a difference or bring a different perspective and make a difference for people in leadership roles, and bring more humanity into leadership after a certain experiences, and that led me back in 2015 to Lehigh Harrison in a commercial role, and I led up talent development across Europe before creating the government affairs role back in 2018.
Well, that's super exciting. Very diverse background. Thank you for sharing that. So fast forward, you've been with LHH, you mentioned a little over 8 years now. I'm sure you've seen the company go through various stages of transformation and just evolving as an organization, and just overall the company as it positions itself and acts as kind of that global leader in, you know, the environmental labor legislation, career management, and learning and development. Tell us a little bit more about the role that you play within the organization, and as when it comes to government affairs, what's, you know, for those that are not familiar, what really falls under your purview?
Yeah. So let me just maybe start with saying that LHH is the world leader in enabling people to make transitions at their career turning points. So I like to see that actually there was a I said that my work-life journey so far wasn't necessarily a result of a thorough planning, but more kind of a opportunistic decision series. And I think there was destiny that I joined LHH because I really believe in the power of making successful transitions and in this career turning points. So our biggest consideration today is goes to the workers and as their transition from different roles. So our core business is around accompanying and giving individuals across the globe, more than roughly 500,000 people worldwide, to give you a bit of an idea, across 60 plus countries. As they transition, many of them externally, as they have to move out of their roles, but a lot of them also transition internally or in leadership roles. In terms of my contribution or the contribution of my team into this big mission of making a difference for so many people worldwide, is I guess it's creating the bridge between the public public institution, public world, and the private companies, and providing or creating the bridge between the insights that that we have, that LHH has from working with a lot of organizations and individuals across the globe, and what's happening on the labor market. What does it need to make successful transitions? What does it need to stay employable, stay relevant? And what to give these insights and to serve the public interest, because as you will know, and these days are certainly more than ever, where we see a lot of governments across, you know, geographies across the globe, no matter the culture, a lot of the governments are making their best right now, either in investment or in policies or both, to allow or to protect as many people as they can through the crisis and beyond, and to allow for, you know, better and smoother work transitions. So how can we create the bridge between these two worlds and make sure that public institutions are best informed, and the other way around, that we can also advise best the corporate world we serve to move and transform within these environments. So that's kind of what I would say that in big picture, what I do. Obviously, you know, there are you know, insights gathering, there is a thought leadership involved, but also a lot of advocacy and creating a position based on our experience and expertise to share.
Very interesting. And when it comes to the different trends and ideas that really excite you these days from the industry or the functional domain area that you operate in, what are some of the things that you're most excited about? Where do you see the labor market shifting towards to? What are some of the trends that you've been researching lately?
There are probably two trends. So I'm thinking, you know, what excites me most? There are so many things that excite me. So that is sometimes hard to just focus on one. But when it comes to let's say, the world of work and this whole idea of how do we as individuals, because at the end of the day, this is what we all are, whatever our function, whatever our occupation, we are individuals and want to be relevant in this world. I think I'm super sensitive to ideas, and that involves sustainability and the way that, and when I say sustainability, I don't mean just the environment sustainability, which certainly is a very important one. And I'm also quite sensitive to this type of ideas on how to basically change and save the world, if we can put it that way. But I'm very, I'm watching out for these ideas around how can we boost and bring more sustainability in the world of work, in thinking more about, you know, workers or individuals as renewable resources and resources to be developed versus replaceable resources that you think of them as talent in one at one point in time, and then once they become obsolete because you need new skills, you replace them. So these ideas around sustainability and bringing more sustainability to the world of work is certainly something that that I watch very very thoroughly. And the other big piece is around that I've been researching, or that we are currently researching, is the role of career coaching in the whole dynamic of work transitions, and to what extent people need and value and find value and benefits in the orientation they can get as they, you know, try to navigate these new rules or new dynamic on the labor market, on the world of work in general. The new flexibility and agility, you know, comes with a not a downside necessarily, but a need for more orientation. And so these are the kind of the two areas that that really excite me, particularly these days.
Yes, very interesting. You post a lot, and you kind of, you've mentioned in one of your responses earlier, the whole concept of employability, or staying employable. What are some of the most common mistakes that you see in the market these days when it comes to professionals either coming, you know, transitioning or maybe shifting to a different career paths when it comes to staying employable, maintaining that employability factor? What are some of the pitfalls to avoid that if you were to, I know it's a very loaded question, but when it comes to some of the key concepts, if you could highlight from that perspective.
Yeah, and maybe I would just highlight one big one, because I think in the end, it's a lot down to the individual and the particular situation, right? What are the aspirations, what you want, what you have, and find a match in there. But I would say probably, you know, go back to Marshall Goldsmith, if you have read this book, and certainly there are some good ways to get a little bit more grasp around this idea. But he wrote that book, it's already some time ago, but, you know, what got you here won't get you there. And I know the book is specifically oriented towards, you know, top leaders, the top of the house. But I think this is a way of, it can be a philosophy, and it can be linked to, you know, resilience or growth mindsets. But I think at the end of the day, it's really about thinking that where you are right now, it doesn't mean that you can't play or rely on the recipes from the past. So thinking that you have a good level of education is not going to be enough, or it's not going to be sufficient to, you know, stay relevant. Or we see a lot of candidates or people in transition who passed a certain age, and there is no discrimination in this statement, but it's more with a certain level of season. I think you know, one can think that there is a lot of ideas around this, which don't necessarily are correct, but you know that the flexibility is lacking. So thinking about you know, staying flexible and open-minded, and think about what's next and what inspires you, and what is really that what you want to do, is certainly you know, the best indicator versus you know, what have you done and what you have in your backpack and what you all you have achieved, and that's going to be enough to bear you for the rest of your, or the remaining, or the second part, the third part of your career.
Right. No, those are great recommendations. You know, seems so simple, but yeah, oftentimes overlooked when it comes to staying employable, staying relevant, staying ahead of the curve. So that's very interesting. You've met, when we talked a little bit about the trends, I've been observing quite a bit, and I see through a lot of the client companies that I'm working with, for whom we're building technology and things like that, the growth of the concept of contingent worker, where you have contractors, consultants, the gig working space is, you know, has been on the rise the last couple of years. And pandemic really boosted that, because a lot of companies now looking for ways to scale up or down, you know, in a very efficient manner, and build kind of the workforce around it that really helps them to stay very agile, flexible, and nimble. What are your thoughts on the overall contingent workforce trend that has been occurring, you know, the past couple of years, and where do you see this going?
Where it's also a very big question, but clearly when we think about, and this also is a big buzzword, you have to talk about the future of work. What does the future bring? I don't like to think of the future of work as a kind of a state, but it's more of an evolution, and what we're seeing, and certainly there is a big focus or trend towards more and more flexibilization, both in terms of consumption, and when I say consumption, I mean terms of work consumption, right? From companies, from buyers of work, if you will, but also a need to be more agile. So there is the need to be flexible, but the agility is to be able to adjust based on a very rapidly changing surrounding environment. So certainly, you know, this trend around contingent workforce is here to stay, and not at least as a mean to, get this flexibility and provide companies with an opportunity to optimize their cost base. Now, we hear a lot of our clients say that, they estimate, I mean, up to, I've heard different figures, but some of the most shocking were 75% of workforce being contingent of some kind, right? So can you imagine what that means in terms of, you know, leadership, in terms of engagement, and even in terms of metrics that we or that HR has been looking at so far, you know, being retention being one of them that is relatively static? And think about, how do you retain contingent workforce? So per definition, the contingent is not here to be retained or not retained in the same way. So I think these are some of the big questions on how to, you know, consider this growing proportion of the workforce becoming, you know, contingent and more flexible. And per definition, it can be a, you know, big aspiration. But how do companies kind of embed them into their, you know, leadership and kind of strategy to align all the resources towards one big goal or one big vision?
Right. No, absolutely. Couldn't agree more with you on that. You've mentioned future of work, and we've been hearing a lot, you know, that trend lately in the news, especially in the, just overall as an industry of workforce, with organizations designing also their structures, whether that's a hybrid model, fully remote, and just trying to bring people out, you know, back to physical locations. Obviously, that also creates a lot of, you know, uncertainty, anxiety amongst the workers who have been, you know, operating fully remote in the past year or so. What are your thoughts on kind of the future of work through the next period? And what are some of the recommendations, I guess, you may have for the companies that are trying to structure their organizations in this manner?
It's really an interesting world, right? Future of work. When I think back in the days when I started in HR, I was totally new to HR and HR consultancy. I remember we started to talk about this VUCA world, and that's already, I won't disclose too much of my age, but it's about 20 years back. So a few, you know, a couple of years have passed, and we are still in this VUCA world. So I strongly believe that, you know, future of work is kind of fine. Maybe we need to come up with a different word or expression for that, but it's kind of more of an evolution and you know, different sectors, different cultures and different professions at the different pace, right? But clearly, as I mentioned, I think the evolution goes towards more flexibility, more agility, but also in the similar way than consumption in general is more personalization. So, you know, I want to do this here and now. I was talking the other day with someone I met on LinkedIn, and actually she was calling in from actually she lives and work normally in the same country than I do, but actually she was calling in from somewhere you know, South Pacific, because she was spending the months there just because she was fed up with you know, staying around the house within the lockdown periods, etc. So you know, it's kind of giving you a lot of possibilities. But as I said before, I think there is also the downside, the flip side, because I don't think it has to be a negative, but clearly, you know, there is the fear and you know, that this lack of structure, but also the big questions around the abuse or the lack of social security and to some extent this discrimination between those in employment and those outside of a fixed and regulated term of employment contract. I think these are big questions that needs to be addressed. They are currently being addressed very widely, but still needs to be, you know, more specifically addressed and translated into and that's probably more work for public institutions, right, to ensure that that there is a you know, a same and equal level of protection, social protection for all, no matter what kind of contract and contract nature individuals are in. But the other flip side is also that I come across very frequently people, and I said that's also a topic that is of high interest from my side, is this the need for orientation, because with more options, more opportunities, you also need to make more decisions. And decisions are a factor of stress. So from fear of making the wrong decisions, but also getting across how, you know, what is the best decision for you now. So this need for orientation, and we come across, I said, a lot of people who are lost in what kind of skilling. They kind of know, they picked up that if they want to stay employable, they need to, you know, be open, have a network, invest in their skills, but what? Because there are so many options, right? So how, what is best for me? What does match my aspirations and my current, you know, goals? So I think, you know, one big recommendation that I would have, and that's not just for individuals, but that's also for companies in at their own levels, it's that, you know, career coaching and orientation, however we want to call it, is advancing, becoming more important than ever. So everyone should have a career coach, not necessarily a life coach, right? And career doesn't have to be, you know, a career in terms of ramping up the career ladder. It's really about a work-life journey type of orientation, right? To help reflect upon where you are, what you want, what are your aspirations. And on the flip side, as I said, you know, the employers, if they want to, you know, be seen as a serious employers investing targetedly in their human capital, they should also seriously think about how they can enable individuals in you know, making these decisions in a growingly insecure world, and whether it's offering career coaching, whether it's about you know, enabling their leaders to act more as coaches on a day-to-day basis. There are a lot of different ways to do that, and it needs to fit the environment. But at the end of the day, it's really about this orientation, providing a framework.
Right. No, that's an interesting framework for kind of thinking about the overall concept of this. And I'm pretty sure, you know, we're going to see a lot of different trends and ideas that are really going to come about through the next very short period, as, you know, the world is coming out of pandemic, so to say, and how organizations really approach that is going to be very interesting to observe. Okay. We've seen kind of that war for talent out there. It's been very active in, you know, this period. So the take this further, the war for on retention has becoming even more intense when it comes to organizations really being able to have a system in place, have an environment in place that really allows them to foster and retain the top talent within the organizations. What are your thoughts on the best practices and some of the practical recommendations for companies to really kind of succeed in the whole aspect of retention when it comes to the top performance that they have?
It's a very interesting question, because in terms of retention, we need to think about what are the kind of metrics. I would encourage every organization to think about what is not just the metrics that they have, but what is the objective that they are pursuing, and in particular, how do they consider what's the value of the human capital, of the workers, the workforce for them? It's about the mindset to how HR should be positioned, and this mindset will condition how an organization can attract and keep people, right? But when it comes to retention specifically, retention can be a goal in itself. It can be a metric, and a lot of organizations have that as a way to measure effectiveness of one of the measures of the effectiveness of an HR department, for example, or the health of their workforce. But if you think of what we discussed earlier about you know, workforce becoming more contingent, more flexible, different forms of work to be brought together under one single umbrella, which is at the end of the day the organization. I don't believe that retention will be kept as a metric as we have known it for, as in, you know, how many people are still there after 1, 2, 3 years of employment, and how companies should think about keeping their talent, keeping the resources of the people who are important to them. And when I'm hesitating, because talent is there, behind talent there are always people, right? But at the same time, the talent encompasses beyond the person itself, also, you know, what they have in terms of strengths, the skills they have acquired, the experience, and also the deep link to a certain organization and this agility within a certain culture. I think this is what we also mean by talent. Take one person out of one environment and bring it in a different one. This same person might not be the same level of talent, and not because the person suddenly has become crab or you know has lost any cognitive abilities. It's just because a certain environment allows certain people to strive more than others, and of course it requires a great combination. So I come back to this idea of retention. A understanding who do you want to retain, and in what format. Because retention, keep the person employed in a certain context, sounds quite rigid for the direction that the world of work is taking. So I would rather advocate for, you know, spending more thoughts on engagement and having this deeper connection, either on purpose, either on or potentially, right, on purpose, on a deep connection between the organization, its vision, strategy, with the person, the worker, as opposed to retain that link, which is a little bit more materialistic. So, you know, cut a long story short, right? Let us think more about how do I keep people engaged with my brands, even if they currently might not be working for me. Right, they have been working the last year or so on a specific project. Now they are going, making some other, experiences or gaining more skills, and they might come back either as a consumer or as a, you know, a reference provider for a new employee, or maybe as a new employee. So how do we flexibilize this idea of retention way beyond retention itself, but really around engaging and connecting this deeper link?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought process, and I can definitely see a lot of value in that, really focusing on, also you mentioned metrics as well, I think establishing basically an overall system and the culture that focuses on not only the materialistic aspects of really the retention, but what are kind of the value add from both sides, for the employer and the employee. So that's very interesting. Muriel, in conclusion, I'd like to talk a little bit about your content diet. What are your sources for learning? What do you consume on a daily basis for self-actualization? Share with us.
I love this term of content diet. There's so much you can read about diets and all sorts of nutrition pieces. So I love to think about content as a way to consume. So thanks you for bringing that up, which I've never heard.
And we have
heard.
So much thrown at us these days. You have to be so selective with that.
Totally. And I'm a big, I must say my diet, if I can put it that way, right, has evolved also over the years and the decades. And I must say that I'm a big fan of the 70-20-10 rule. And I'm probably more in favor of 97-3 maybe. So a lot is happening in reflection and taking the time to digest what either I've read or what I have heard from others and interactions. And I think this is something that is a big luxury. In my role, I also talk a lot to public institutions around, you know, how to make learning more visible, and this question around the formal and informal learning, right? A lot of what we learn on a daily basis is actually informal. You don't have to sit on a webinar or take a course or a MOOC of some kind, right? Or go, if you have the luxury to go in a classroom these days, right? And to sit and listen, right? Actively, specifically, and it's labeled as learning. I really truly believe that, you know, learning is happening all the time, but for that, you need to make it more conscious. So taking the time and digesting what has happened, what you have heard, and what that means for you, I think is a big luxury these days, but is what I would say a big source of my learning. Now, you said content diets. Obviously, it's not just about how I learn, but what kind of content I consume, right? So, you know, a lot of, as I said, my colleagues and you know, in my work, my colleagues and external partners, my kids for sure. But then I consume a lot on, you know, videos and smaller podcasts and, you know, and I use all different sorts of you know, of content, being you know, soft skills content and hard skills content, so you know, from podcasts, TED Talks, and of course newspapers and the big ideas are a really old part of my diet. But as I said, you know, a big piece of it is making sure that I can digest, because reading a lot is and reading and listening a lot is not is not sufficient.
Right, absolutely. No, I love these recommendations. Muriel, can't thank you enough for your time today. It was very insightful conversation. You know, I personally learned quite a bit. We'll stay in touch. I do a lot that with my guests, that we do another recording in about a year and see how much I've changed, how much I've transpired. We revisit our conversation from a year ago and see how accurate we were in predicting some of the trends. So I'm definitely looking forward to that with you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, looking forward for this conversation. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.